WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. John Cale wrote the music for the new film I Shot Andy Warhol. Cale co-founded one of the most influential bands in rock history, the Velvet Underground. Early on, the band was managed by Andy Warhol. Cale came to rock from the world of the classical avant-garde. He co-founded the Velvets in 1965 with Lou Reed. Reed wrote and sang most of the band's songs. Cale played viola and piano. The group had a dark urban vision that bands today still emulate. Cale left the Velvets in 68 and since then has been writing and singing his own songs. In 1990, Cale reunited with Lou Reed to record a series of songs they wrote about Andy Warhol. From that album, Songs for Drella, this is a song about Valerie Solanas, the woman who shot Andy Warhol.
Valerie Solanas took the elevator, got off at the fourth floor. Valerie Solanas took the elevator, got off at the fourth floor. She pointed the gun at Andy, saying, "You cannot control me anymore." I believe there's got to be some retribution. I believe an eye for an eye is elemental. I believe there's something wrong if she's alive right now.
Now, you got out of Wales by, do I have this right, by getting a scholarship to study at Tanglewood in New England?
Yeah, I went to college in London for 3 years, and then from there applied to a number of different places to continue. And I met Aaron Copland in London while he was traveling through. And I'd written a number of pieces by that time and was studying composition with Humphrey Searle. And wanted really to hook up with John Cage and work with him, and so I kind of was adamant about going to New York, whether or not I got the scholarship. But it was certainly a big help.
What was your experience at Tanglewood like?
The pieces I was interested in having performed to the people that were running Tanglewood were too violent. I mean, they carried a lot of violence with them.
What do you mean the pieces you were interested in were too violent?
Well, there were some pieces that eventually, when I did perform it there, had Mrs. Kosovitsky running out of the room in tears. But the students were prepared for it. I mean, they came with eggs and let me have it. So it was a different approach to composition, and it was more in the performance art side of things rather than in the studious written manuscript form.
Give me a sense of what you were doing on stage when they were throwing the eggs at you. What were you playing?
Well, they waited until I'd finished, but I had an axe on a table on stage, and in the middle of the piece that involved prepared piano, I picked up the axe and sort of split the table. And in the middle of an ostensibly straightforward piece of prepared piano, it's not the thing that they expected. I mean, they expected something to happen, not quite something as horrifying as they saw.
Why were you doing that?
It was, well, I mean, there were various ways in which you can cut the piano up and really to get the noise of splintering wood and creaking, breaking wood, like an old galleon that would be breaking up at sea. I mean, you had to work at it a little bit. It wasn't just sheer pummeling.
So you were doing this for the sonic effect?
Partly.
And the other part?
The other part was shock value.
Mm-hmm. And what did you enjoy out of the shock value?
I was expecting to be able to gain a little more time to find my feet and find a direction for myself musically.
When you started playing in the Velvets, how did you find a place for the viola? I mean, this was not a common instrument in rock bands by any means.
Well, from a theoretical point of view, it was really just to create space and make something orchestral. Because we all loved Phil Spector and thought that with the four pieces and the viola doing just the fifths and the changes, that you could create a big space, you know, with just four pieces. And that was the ideal, was to do something big and orchestral like Phil Spector did.
Of course, what you were doing was completely unlike what Phil Spector did.
Yeah,
so you're doing this really kind of avant-garde drone in a lot of the pieces.
Yeah, but it's still, I think it still achieved the space. It wasn't the kind of Wagnerian space that Phil Spector was doing. And he combined R&B rhythms with that Wagnerian style. And we were kind of more, I think Lou was more into the Chuck Berry side of the guitar than into the R&B side of it. So it was a little more rockabilly, for want of a... That's the wrong phrase to really apply to. I don't know what style you'd call what Sterling and Lou were really doing, but whatever came out of it was certainly different, and that was enough for us.
I want to play Heroin, and I'd like you to talk about what you're doing toward the end of this recording and how you decided what you were going to do.
Well, when the last verse came about, the whole thing was supposed to fall apart. And there would be this driving drum pattern. And I would turn and feed back the viola or take the pickup off and twirl it around like a nightstick. And the feedback would really get out of control, and sometimes you just have just sheer noise coming out of it. And then it would end, and it would end quietly. And it was meant to build to that climax anyway.
Let's hear it. This is John Cale with the Velvet Underground.
Heroin, it's my wife, and it's my life, because a maniac.
When the Velvets were doing songs like this, did you relate to this street life and to the strung-out songs? To songs about drugs?
Yeah, I was intrigued by the street sensibility there. And I learned a lot from it because I hung out with Lou for a while and he showed me a lot of different sides of New York street life. But at the same time, one of the things that we got through very early on was this argument about the definition of what is risky, both in literature and in everyday things. And it seemed like we would push each other in that way. But there was a lot of engagement going on the literary side of things, that we would discuss and really be enthralled by a lot of different writers and keep reassuring ourselves that we really understood what the priorities were. And that was a very important part of it that went on early and sustained itself for a long time, for about 3-4 years.
I know when you were playing with Lou Reed in the Velvet Underground that there was... some friction between the two of you. Could you explain something about what the friction had to do with in terms of the music and the both of you as personalities?
Well, it was basically that the band was spending a lot of time on the road, and in contrast to the way the Banana album was recorded, there was very little time spent in thinking and working on the arrangements. We'd become a road band, and we would go on stage, and we put the backbeat behind everything that we did, and that would be it. The Banana album, on the other hand, was the product of a year and a half of fairly sedentary and boring rehearsals, which is kind of what gave us time to come up with the different arrangements that were there, and that was interesting to me. At the same time, in the general context of touring and having publicity and having a record out, we would find people that had opened for us years before suddenly soaring up the charts, and we would be in pretty much the same spot. And this was a source of great debate, which got more and more heated about which direction the band should go in, whether it should go for the pretty songs or whether we should go for the orchestral and the harder ones.
Which side were you on?
Well, I thought there was a way of covering both, but the only way to have done that would have been to stop and calm down a lot and focus a lot more. But I think at that point, if it didn't happen in a split second, it wasn't going to happen. That is, people's attention span was very short. And at the time, it just got to the point where there was no discussion anymore. And also, there's a question of management that entered into it that really thought that this was no longer a band, that there was just one artist here. And that sort of hurried things along mightily.
John Cale recorded in 1994. This is Fresh Air.